We've landed. We're live.
We're here.
What's going on, Joe Adamo?
Oh, you know, after a big win, you get the big guns in, yeah? So here we are. Here we
Missed the hole in one himself, mate. Can't miss.
Hey.
Oh, you've muted yourself, you peanut.
That's how excited we're getting. I've unplugged back.
Oh my god! No, I had a weekend for the ages. It was it was good. It was very, very good.
We're gonna get into it, mate. We're gonna get into all of it. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Blue Abroad Show. It's Monday, the 22nd of April, 2024. We're talking about a round six win against the GWS Giants. Got Joe Adamo back to back Sunday night, Monday night. He's just
OT.
Yeah. Wow, the Blues are good, mate. We follow a good club.
We're not just good; we're fucking good. That's what we are, mate. We are the real deal. Anyone that wants to say anything now, they can't. There's literally nothing that can be said. There is nothing more that this team can do to gain the trust of supporters, to gain the respect of the competition. It's over. The season is over. We're going to be there on grand final day and we're going to win the lot. That's it. It's just done. It's done. I don't come on this show to pussyfoot around. I come here and I tell it as it is. Yeah. At the end of the day, we're the best team in the comp. That's it. That's all that can be said.
We're going all right, aren't we?
you need to just loosen the lid a little bit, Tez. Just a little bit.
Somebody's got to keep the lid on. I have the lid on. I've unscrewed it a bit. I think we saw the most balanced performance with this group.
Without doubt. Without a doubt. That was I don't think I've seen us put together the turnover game and the stoppage game like that within one game in isolation. That was that was impressive, mate. That was really, really impressive.
Yeah, it was. And we're going to get into it. Guys, tonight is a really big show. So we're going to go through round six shortly, themes and issues. You're going to bring up your key moments in the comments. So just think about now the key moments throughout the game that you want to bring up on screen. We're going to talk about the violent Blues. We're going to talk about playing against Geelong this week, themes and issues that have come up. We'll hopefully get an injury update throughout the show. And then the giveaway. Guys, the biggest giveaway that we've ever done on the Blue Abroad YouTube channel. I'm going to give you the full rundown. It's going to happen this time next week. And I'm going to show you all the prizes to be won. And so, Joe, let's start. Ladies and gents in the chat, three words to summarize round six. Joe, I know you did this last night, but talk to me about round six. What happened?
Three words, too fucking good. There you go. In summary, we just were. The fact that at halftime, laying 16 tackles or whatever it was, or 20 tackles as a team, 12 players had not laid a single tackle, and somehow we'd had the same scoring opportunities and were only 9 points behind on the scoreboard. I looked at it and went, all we need to do is apply a little bit of pressure here in the second half and they will crumble. And they decided to pull the finger out. That was it. Giants couldn't keep up. That was once we put the foot on the gas, hole in one, very good. I like that. Very good three words, actually. Once we decided to put the foot on the gas, that was it. They could not touch us. And at stoppage in particular, we were back to our brutal best. And in my opinion, as important, Jules will tell you otherwise. I know what he is very, very big on the turnover game, and it is absolutely necessary. But in my opinion, for the profile of our list, we are at our very best when we brutalize teams at stoppage, and we saw it. We saw it for what it was.
Yeah. Well, I think when it's all said and done, to win a flag, you got to be harder for long enough, harder and tougher for long enough. You have to be able to punish teams on turnover. We saw that with the Giants. I mean, let's be honest. It seemed like any mistake we made in the first half in particular, they were kicking a goal from it. Like any mistake whatsoever. They were lethal. Did you ever feel like it was just a little bit too hard at times and that they were just too good?
Yeah, I thought in the third quarter, it's the first half of the third quarter, it actually looked like that we came out with a different application and still they had answers for us to start that quarter. And we couldn't hit the scoreboard and they kicked two quick ones, got it out to 20 points. And at that point, I thought, you know what? It's just not our day. Maybe the injuries are too much to overcome at this point. Williams obviously going off as well. So then you got to deal with another injury on game day. Weeders with the corked quad. How good's he going to be in the second half? And it just looked like it wasn't going to go. It just honestly looked like it wasn't going to go our way on the day. But wowee, like it's character. It's the character of this team. And as soon as you doubt them and as soon as you write them off, they'll throw it back at you and they'll say, not yet. And we're not done. And we haven't even started. And they literally got started halfway through the third and never looked back. And it was a 50-point turnaround at one point, and that's it. That's all she wrote at that point. And especially, you know, there's a big debate about who starts it, right? Is it the fans or is it the players that brings that energy? It has to come from the players first. Like, we're not just going to be ballistic in the stands as fans for nothing. But when we saw it, by God, did we get behind it. Like, that was Sydney 2022 second quarter areas, that third quarter. That was party time.
There is something about Saturday. First of all, one of the most heartwarming parts about doing the review this week, I asked a question in my review. I asked, like, those who lived through the golden era, like, is that what the premiership quarter was like back in the days? Mm. Is that because I was next to Steph. We would like little children jumping, screaming, double fist, fist pumps, hugging.
I did this one point. What am I doing? I didn't even know why I did it.
and I asked those who lived in the golden era, I'm like, is that what the premiership quarter was like? Because I'm sure your dad used to tell you all the time, you know, back in the day, you knew no matter what, we might have been a little bit down in the first half, but you just knew in the third quarter they would come out and blitz it. And now I kind of not understand, I never will, but I was like, wow, you people live through unbelievable. You got that every week? Like, that's crazy. That was so enjoyable.
Oh yeah, mate. If they bring that every week in the third, it's gonna be a fun year. It's gonna be fun. But like I said, I was just impressed. I was impressed that it was going against us, that everything went against us during the week. And somehow, again, not for the first time this year, we managed to turn it around mid-game. And you can say what you want about the coaching staff. There's been plenty that have been said about Michael Voss in particular in the past that he can't coach on game day. You cannot get that out of your squad unless you are a leader to your playing group. And it's credit to him. Credit to him and the coaching staff, because that's a massive turnaround in game. Massive.
So many adjustments. I mean, you lose the players that you lose. You already have to, you know, empower sort of your next layer of players to perform a role. Then you get an injury to Zach Williams at halftime. You've then got to get Jordan Boyd mentally ready to play Zach Williams' role and lock down on Toby Green. Jacob Wiedering gets a corky. So you then got to find a way to make sure that Lewis Young is really clear on what he needs to do. And so many moving parts that require so much clear instruction. But at the end of the day, when you've got a team that's bought in the way that this group has bought in to each other, they'll do whatever it takes. And that's why I get so fucking annoyed when we get so negative. It's like they're learning right before our eyes. Like, it's happening. They're gonna slip up like last week. But this group, their floor has risen. Their worst is a lot better than what it's ever been. And now we're watching what their best can look like.
Like I said, that first half, the tackling pressure was in the areas of the Essendon game last year, 16 tackles to halftime. But somehow we found ourselves in it against an unbeaten side and right in it. You know, if you want to talk about your floor, like that is the floor now. The floor is we played at arguably our worst around the ground and let them have whatever they wanted in transition up till halftime. And still they couldn't get more than, and mind you, with straight kicking, they still couldn't get more the 9 points in front at halftime.
Yeah.
You want to talk about last week as a slip up? I don't see it as a slip up. Adelaide kicked 16-4. If you saw what they did against Essendon when they kicked 11-9, they bring that kicking to last week's game. We're 6-0 right now. That's the only difference. That is the only difference. It's not a slip up. We've come up at one point in this game against the Giants. Our opposition in the last 2 weeks across six quarters had kicked 25 goals, eight. And wow. Our deficit across those two games at that point was 11 points to kicking in front of goal that was 25-8. And we were 21-21. So if you want to look at numbers, if you want to look at stats, at the end of the day, if they didn't kick anywhere near as accurate as they did as they kicked the last 2 weeks, we would have blown both of them off the park. So if you're not understanding that for what it is and understanding the scenarios that we found ourselves in with our opposition, you're not seeing the big picture and you're not seeing the full picture. We are the best team in the competition. Get it through your head. Week to week, we are the best team in the entire comp with 13 on the injury list. We've got cattle to come back and we're doing what we're doing. This is it now. We said it last year. We thought it was it last year. We saw that spark and we saw that energy in the second half of the year and we all thought this could be it. This could genuinely be it. I'm telling you now, this is it because this is different again and we haven't seen this from this group.
Yeah, there's that balanced profile. I think I had written down, I saw on Bagalytics, that's the one, on Twitter, had written down the sources from our scores. So 4 goals, 6:30 from the defensive half, 6 goals, 5:41 from center bounce, 7 goals, 4:46 in the forward half. Mm-hmm. One of the more balanced, that's, I don't want to say we've peaked early, but I think we take that. We sort of tuck it away and we refer to it later in the year. That's very impressive what we did.
Very. This is now a side as well, keep in mind, was 16 of our last 19.
There you go. Wow.
So put this into perspective. If we were 19 rounds into this season and we were 16-3, how would we be acting? Yeah? That's true. The form that we're in. That is the form that we're in over the last 19 games. We're not talking about a side that has just done this every now and then and we're streaky and we're this and we're that. We are 16-3 from our last 19. There is no other side in the comp that has a better form line than that over those 19 weeks.
Mm.
No one.
Wow.
I told you, hey, you want to get me on, I'll pump you up. By the end of this show, everyone's going to be saying, yep, I'll book my grand final tickets now.
Okay. Let's talk about some of the themes and issues from the game that you thought were critical. I thought a chat as well. What were, key moments, key passages of play, etc. Joe, I think going into the game, going into the week, the Pitto conversation, the Pitto TDK, we're too slow with two of them, blah, blah, blah. How did you see that one playing out?
I thought he was absolutely brilliant all day. And not just second half, like when we started to get going, I thought Pitto all day was brilliant. And it's a credit to him because obviously he would have heard the noise for sure. They all do. We'd be lying to ourselves and they'd be lying to themselves if they said that they didn't hear the noise throughout the week. That was a big statement game from a player that was under the pump. And under the pump for no good reason, if in my opinion. It was one, he'd come back for one game. Like, you can't make judgment. We still can't make a judgment call after two games. You can't on whether two rucks is going to work. But he did stand up. He gave him the middle finger and he said, no, I can play. Like, I'll show you that I can dominate a game. And he did. He did. I thought his field kicking was actually phenomenal, if anyone watched that. He was hitting targets left, right, and center for fun.
Yeah.
For fun.
That first kick to Tom DeConing on the lead was interesting.
Mate. He was hitting targets for fun. So he knows his role. He'll come into it. Again, he's missed a little bit of footy too. So you've got to give a little bit of leeway to find your feet. And yeah. I think if he can string together 5 or 6 games across his block, I think in 6 weeks' time we'll be talking about Pitto's importance to this side in a very, very different way. Very different way.
Wowdy, I'm with you on this. So this was just after Kelly had kicked his third goal. In the third quarter, then there was this passage of play on the wing. And I thought this lifted the crowd. And maybe there was something to be said about it because at that point in the game, I felt it. I don't know if I'm assuming a lot of us did, but there was just a little bit of, I don't know if it was fear, but like the fear of it being a bit too hard and we were just struggling and Williams was off and Wiedering was hindered. And they just had this insurmountable feeling to the game. So when Akers makes this tackle, lifts the crowd, then we get our first goal afterwards and party time after that. But I did think this was a really critical moment.
It definitely was. It definitely was. I sort of spoke about the podcast last night, though, and even watching the replay back, it although that moment is probably one that you can pinpoint, I actually felt like it was a bit of a progression in that third quarter, and it wasn't really like a flick of the switch. I felt like we came out and we progressively started to look like we were back in the game, and regardless of what the scoreboard said and they kicked away by a couple more goals, I still felt at that point there's something there. Like they're not – They are still rocking up to contest, and Cripps is still doing what he's doing in and under, and Walsh is getting his hands on the footy, and we haven't stopped, and they're not getting over the top of us. So it still, for me, felt like more of a progressive flow to that crescendo, if you want to call it, rather than just a flick of the switch moment. But if you were to pinpoint something, I would say the Akers tackle for sure, especially considering the tackle numbers to halftime. Like, you know, you've got to set the tone. And I think that was a tackle he laid right in front of our bench too, so that would have really, really giving him a rise. Like that's, that is a good moment.
I forgot to play one video. Just go back to the Pitto Tom DeConing conversation. Yeah. This was Pitto after the game. I want to watch it. 2:36. Just have a listen to what stands out to you. I'm going to ask you all to just think about what you think of when you hear this conversation.
Here in the rooms, the victorious rooms with Mark Pitnett, Brad, really good to get back on the winners list.
Absolutely. I was going to be a bit concerned if we lost the second game that I've come in and be like, oh, I don't want to be the causation here. But it was such a good win. I mean, the response we had in the second quarter when GWS really came, because they're such a quality team, we knew they'd come hard at some point. So I thought it was really big for our identity just to be able to hold up mid-quarter, get it back on our terms, and then come out hard in the second half.
Really big week. A lot of talk this week. I guess what was the message from Vossi leading into the game? And do you reckon the boys managed to get it done?
I fully thought that was a Taylor Swift album question. Really big week leading into Friday.
That can come.
We just spoke about that defense side. So our identity is that pressure and contest. And we didn't quite nail the defense against Adelaide last week. So it was big focus on being able to just up that this week. Didn't get it as much as we'd like to, so it'll be an area of focus still, but we'll just keep bringing that and building that as the year goes.
Still not a Taylor Swift question, but also plenty of talk around yourself and TDK. You've said from the start.
How good was he?
He was very good.
Kick three.
He said from the start that you both can play together. You've said that as well. Did we say that today?
Yeah, I thought he was awesome. I thought he was so good, and I think we just bring out the best in each other. Just being able to read which one of us had doing better against a different matchup. One stage, he was having a great hot run against Briggs, so we went, mate, you just go run, I'll go forward, I like this, get to play at the goal square, tell Charlie to get out. I thought he was unreal, and just our connection aerially as well. There are a couple of times where being able to see that he's going to get a good run and jump, and I've got a big ruck who doesn't look like he wants to jump too much, so I can be able to block for him, give him a good launch, and just gets us more field position. So I think we're building our chemistry even more, so it's exciting to see where we can get to.
Do you feel like the team's clearance work has gotten back to a good level in the last fortnight?
I think that's part of our identity is that clearance, just being able to play the front half game. So I feel like, I mean, we had a really big number out of centre bounce today, so if we can do that, that helps. Just being able to do that, get it on our terms, get in our front half, just exactly what we want. So if we can just keep building the way we are, perfect.
We hear so often about the 19th player in that third quarter when we're getting plenty of clearances out of the middle. The crowd well and truly came with you.
Oh, geez, it makes a difference. If they go quiet, geez, it gets a bit depressing out there. It's hard to get going. So when the other team, like when GWS got on a bit of a run and you hear the crowd going nuts, you're like, okay, like we're fine here. Like we're only a couple goals down. We can get back here. It just gives you so much confidence. So fans make such a difference.
And what about the Taylor Swift album?
Haven't listened yet. I was saving it. I didn't want to listen pre-game. That's why I was like, I actually can't comment. I heard it's about two hours of song time. So I've got about 8 hours cleared for tomorrow. So give it a few good listens for you. I'll let you know Monday.
You've earned it, Brad. Well done.
Thank you very much.
How do you not love that guy?
For me, I don't understand the Taylor Swift obsession, but anyway, that's another discussion.
Same, but it's so funny. He's such a brute as a footballer, but he's so gentle when you see him and speak to him in person.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, no, he seems like a very, very nice bloke. Very nice bloke. Interesting. Very interesting comments. What were your thoughts on it straight out?
Three things that I took when I listened to it. Number one, he's first instinct was, oh, I was a bit worried about coming into the team, didn't want to be the causation. Like that, I think that's real. I think that fear is real. Number two, pumped up Tom any chance he got. And you can tell that they love playing off each other and working together. And then number three, the really, really clear and really stark comments about the crowd. It's like, it gets a bit depressing out there when it's not going our way. Yeah, Wildy, good word, humility. Super humble. And I don't know why. Why is a guy like him not more glorified? That's what you want in your club, especially when you've got so many stars that we do.
Who doesn't love a big ruck? Like, honestly, who doesn't love a ruck that's up and about? Like, it's one of the best things to see in our game when there's a ruckman like him, not like Tom, who's a bit more athletic, but when there's a ruckman that has their limitations, that is literally dominating a game. Like, it's one of the best things to see. It's one of the best things to watch. Yeah, all good points from you, Tez. A couple of things that I've reflected on. So we all know his importance at the center bounce. That can't be questioned now, and it's stoppage, right? So he gives our midfield first use. So on that point, our midfield is too good to not get first use. So we can't actually be a team that purely relies on transition, because we've got bulls at the feet of our ruck that can work a stoppage. So I understand this argument that our flags are one-off turnover and transition and this and that. Yeah, okay, in general, yes. But in general, teams don't have Patrick Cripps, Sam Walsh, George Hewitt, Matt Kennedy, and Adam Chera that can run through their stoppage work at midfield. So I just think the balance of our profile between stoppage and turnover is going to be slightly different to what we see in general. And I think it has to be, because if you're not giving those guys first use, we're doing ourselves a disservice. We really are. So that's the first point. Secondly, Pitto's role isn't only to give us service at stoppage. What he does for Tom to agree to, I just read Gavin's comment and I agree. But what he does for Tom to free him up, to free Tom up around the ground and roam and be a third tall when we need him to be and pinch hit in the ruck when we need him to be and then roam around the ground to take and contest the mark on the wing. What Pitto does in that team to allow Tom to roam is not spoken about enough. And Tom can't do that when Harry is rucking, because then he's the second tall up forward. And that's not, it's just not Tom's role. He's not, unfortunately, at this stage in his career, he's just not good enough to be a second forward to Charlie. He's not, but he can be a fantastic third tall. So there are layers to Pitto's importance that doesn't get spoken about enough past the point of, yeah, he's great. He's a great tap ruckman. He's a lot more than that. And he gives a lot more than that to this team week in, week out.
Man,
well said. So I thought that was a telling part of the story of round six. You know, we forgot to talk about Sam Walsh last week on the Monday show. I hit end and I'm like, what am I doing? So we'll talk about Walsh and Cripps here.
17... Can I just talk about one more player before we move on to Walsh and Cripps? Please. Just along the same lines as Pitto, right? Around being under a bit of pressure and questioning and all this sort of thing. And I've questioned him for a lot of the season. I know a lot of people have, but Ollie Hollins is another one that stood up on the weekend, and he was a man in that game. He was a man. He didn't look like a boy. He looked like a man. When there were 50-50 balls to be won, he won them. When we needed someone kicking inside 50, hitting a target, he hit targets. Ollie Hollins was absolutely massive on the weekend, and it's a credit to the young man, because I couldn't imagine being 19 years old, second year in the system, and being questioned on whether or not you need a spell, and then having to overcome that, and not only just overcoming it, surpassing expectation against an unbeaten side in round six. So good on him. Good on him. I was proud as punch to see Ollie do what he did on the weekend.
It was a really big moment. 3 minutes 47 to go in the second quarter. Giants were on their run. I think they might have kicked five or six in a row, potentially, up by 20-odd. He goes back. He ran the whole length of the field from D50 to forward 50, took the mark on the end, went back, composed himself, kicked the goal. Really mature moment. And, yeah, I think with Ollie, if we look at Matt Cottrell, all the games that we put into Matt Cottrell, we're now starting to see reap the benefits of it. I think Ollie is going to be no different. I actually think Ollie's probably got a little bit more just natural skill talent than Cottrell. Cottrell's really done it the long and the hard way. Ollie's base level is his work rate. You're going to get rewarded in this game if that's your base level. So he's coming along nicely. He's a 20-year-old kid, just turned 20 in January. He's a baby.
Yep. He is. You know? But he was a man on the weekend, and that's what you want to see from a youngster. Yeah. So credit to him. Full credit.
Mate, we can go through all the players if you like. But
No. Let's go to the two. Let's go. I'll talk about these two for the next 40 minutes if you want. Let's go.
Talk about 17. I mean, Cripps, amazing, obviously. And I don't want to overshadow one for the other, but Sam Walsh is a surgeon. He's like a surgeon just methodically cutting up oppositions.
Good way to put it. I like that. Very good analogy.
17 score involvements, mate. What are you talking about?
You can have your Nick Dacos with 38 touches and 4 score involvements. You can have that. Every day of the week, couldn't give a flying toss bag. Sam Walsh is the best player in the competition, bar none. He really is. I'm sorry, you can't come off a crook back with no preseason, no warm-up game, and come in and have 69 touches in your first two games and 17 score involvements, 3 direct goal assists, and really be the one that I arguably won us the game on Saturday off his own back. He is incredible. He's only 23, right? So I don't know what this guy is going to be at the end of his career. I really don't, because he's played 100 games already at the age of 23.
Oh my God, looks like 23.
He's 23, right? Yeah.
I had to check.
And he's already played 100 games in his career to date with the injuries that he's had to sustain and overcome. And he looks like he's a 300 gamer out there. He's so unassuming. If you didn't watch football and you looked at Sam Walsh, you wouldn't look at him and go, he's the one that's going to tear this game open. But you watch him play football and he makes it look so bloody easy, man. I don't think I've ever seen a player make the game look as easy as what he makes it.
Man, with a broken freaking back.
Kurt Angle. Very good. I like that. Yeah, no, genuinely, he's insane. He's a marvel to watch. The fact that we get another 10 years, 12 years out of him, and we get to go every week and watch him do what he does that's a pleasure. That is a pleasure.
Inshallah. Hopefully, just got to keep him healthy. You almost got to save him from himself. I mean, you see the work rate on game day. So you can only imagine the work rate at training. You know, it's been a bit of a scary couple of years. Let's be honest. You know, back surgery is a serious thing, and you know, depends how you look at it. Charlie had the knee issues, and that seemed to be one of the hardest challenges that a player could face, and the task of trying to come back from those knee surgeries after being out of the game for 2 years almost. You know, it seemed too much. So Walsh has had his challenges over the last 2 years, and he probably will have more challenges over the next couple. But that seems to be the story of him overcoming the scary challenges and coming out the other end.
Yeah. Yep. But I mean, he already has come out the other end. We've seen it in two games. Like this is what I'm saying. This is superhuman what he's able to do. It really is. A back injury should cripple a player for months and months and months and months. And like, is the second time that he's been able to come back from it, like he hasn't missed a beat. It's crazy. It is honestly crazy.
Yeah.
We are so lucky to have a player like Sam Walsh. Like, I don't think people fully appreciate that these types of players, they don't come along every other year. Like he is a class above everyone else in his draft class. There's no argument as to who number one should have been. It's who's number two. Like, did they get it right after that? Because you can't argue it. He's the best player from that draft class. And arguably, I don't think there's been a player since that's been drafted in the midfield that can hold a candle to what he can do. No. Nick Dacos' ball use is unbelievable. His decision-making is unbelievable. I get it. But he doesn't put his head over the football. That's well documented at this point. Sam Walsh can do it all. He's got the tank. He can run back and forth. He's two-way. He can get in and under. He can kick your goals on the scoreboard. He can go inside 50 and hit targets. He does absolutely everything. Everything that you want a footballer to do. He is crazy. Crazy.
We definitely do take some of them for granted. I think because we've got – I think when you look at the profile of the list individually, you would say, oh, how many A-graders are there? Obviously, we're missing probably 6 of them in this game. And I'm over saying I get it because I don't get it anymore. I don't understand why the default reaction is why things will go wrong as opposed to why things could go right. Because this group's proved over the last year now that injuries are no excuse. They're just not an excuse anymore because we've got plenty on the park. And I don't know why it went from we've got Harry, Charlie, Cripps, Walsh and Wiedering in the side to, oh, we don't have Cherisard, McGovern, Motlop in the side. At what point do you think they're going to be trusted collectively?
I don't know. I really don't.
Are we beating a dead horse and is the trust ever going to be there?
It frustrates me to no end to hear some of the comments at the game, like midway through the second quarter.
It's really hard to shut my mouth when
midway through the second quarter, the game hasn't even been played. And like you can hear the groans and you can hear comments about, oh, he's not good enough. He should be dropped. You're shit. Your disposal's rubbish. Where are we? We're nowhere. And then it's like at the end of the game, everyone's celebrating. Like, just cool your jets. Like, let the game play out. And then once the game is played out, don't react instantly through emotion. Like, have a look at it and really reflect on why we might have won or lost. Like, Adelaide last week shit me to tears, Tez, because it was clear as day that if you're kicking 16-4, 100, you're probably going to win the game. Like, all Adelaide needed to do was kick 15-5, which is still phenomenal kicking, but they lose. Like, this is what I'm saying. Like, it's just this instant emotional reaction from a lot of our supporters still. I don't get it. I really don't. I don't know what more this team has to do to gain the complete trust of the fan base. 16 of our last 19, and still there's questions being asked of this group. Like, mate. I don't know.
I wonder, was it like, I don't know because I wasn't alive and don't have a memory of the golden era. Was it like this in the golden era? Was it like this when we were winning flags? Were we wanting to drop people and sack people week to week? Is this just the way it's always been? Because from what I understand, there was just like a trust with the team that they were going to play well and they were going to be hard to beat no matter what. It saps the enjoyment, if I'm honest.
It really does, mate.
It saps the enjoyment. I try and block it out, but it's so loud.
Oh, it really does. I get it. Like, you can be disappointed and you can sit there at halftime and go, fuck, we should have been so much better. But like, internalize it a bit and just wait, like self-soothe a little bit sometimes, you know? Mm. We're taught as babies to self-soothe and then we become adults and we're like children again. In these situations, like, just self-soothe a bit as the game is playing out and try and have some critical thinking and analyze, okay, what's actually going on here? Am I seeing what my emotions are actually telling me? Or is there something else going on that I'm missing that I can take myself out of the situation and go, okay, well, that probably happened because of X, Y, and Z. You know, it's just, I get it. It's an emotional game. Like, footy's emotional, but surely at this point we're past the trauma. Like, this team hasn't traumatized us for almost a year now. And since then, they've given us nothing but joy. So why are we not riding this wave? Mate, it baffles me. It absolutely baffles me. I don't get it. We're going to lose games. We just will.
Yeah. Wowdy. Started from board level 70s, 80s, and 90s. Okay.
Yeah, well, there you go.
Interesting.
It's always been there. It's always been there. I get it. But at the end of the day, we're going to lose games. We're going to have poor patches. We're going to lose quarters. We're going to look like shit in, you know, for 10 minutes, and then we're going to look amazing for the next 10. Like, that's footy. It's not just us. That's footy. Go watch any other football game from the weekend, and every team went through that roller coaster throughout their games. Every team.
Yeah.
I just don't feel like other fan bases, Tez, have the same instant emotional reaction that we do. I don't know if that's something that if that's a perception that's not reality, or if that is actually the case. I don't know.
I think because of what I experienced in the third quarter, because if you're at the game. You saw the first half, the Carlton, you know, chant, clap, clap, clap. It didn't really collectively take off. Then something, maybe it was the Akers tackle, as we mentioned earlier. Something happened. It clicked. Charlie kicks a goal, Harry kicks a goal, then Charlie kicks a goal, and then away we go. That 10 minutes where it was the whole stadium, in unison, the whole stadium clapping and the whole stadium generating that noise, that's going to be the difference between us winning a flag and not winning a flag, in my view.
100%. And so like I said,
I want to harness it. I want to know how can we harness that? If we're every fucking week talking about fucking strength and conditioning, when we don't even know what's going on every week, we don't know how much sleep, recovery, food, we don't have the information. We're trying to sack someone every week. How is that helping? It fucks me up, Joe. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like, I don't know. And like I said, it starts from the playing group on game day, right? So they have to show us something before we really, really get invested and up and about and you know, get around them. But if they're not showing us something, it's not a reason for us to then pile on more. Like, they know if they've been poor. We don't have to groan if there's a missed kick. Like, you can still hear that. It's audible, Tez. A missed kick, you hear that groan still. And I call it the Carlton groan because it is what it is. I've heard that for years. One missed kick into the corridor and you literally hear, oh. And it's like, really? Like, there's going to be mistakes in games. Like, I don't know. Whatever. Like, we try and be positive on a Sunday night as much as we can every week. We try and be positive here as much as we can. I just hope it spreads across the season.
How about this? How about let's make a pledge? Let's use this moment to forgive and let go of the PTSD. Because the PTSD, I think it's an excuse. I think it's an excuse.
It is. It's rubbish.
It's rubbish, done, man. They're not 2021. That's not them anymore. Running around like headless chooks, mate.
They proved it last year. Like, they proved, the group proved to us that they were past all of that, right? So they proved to us that they weren't going to let past demons affect their performance. And they won finals and we got to a prelim. So if they're saying to us, we're past that as a playing group, why are we now not like, okay, well, we're past it as fans. We're with you. I don't know. I could talk about this all day. I really could, because it hits me to tears.
Thing is, we might lose this week.
We might. And guess what? We might lose the week after to Collingwood, and the walls might cave in for like 24 hours on social media. But who gives a shit? Who cares? Because we're going to go out the week after and we'll win. And we'll go out the week after that and we'll win. And we'll go out the week after. And at the end of the day, when the season's said and done, we're holding up the cup. No one's going to remember the loss to Adelaide in round fucking five. You're just not. So why in the moment are we not able to go big picture? This team, what we're seeing week to week, is phenomenal. Phenomenal. Yeah. And they're going to have their patches.
And respectfully, just because you grew up with the golden era doesn't mean you get to take away the enjoyment from the current generation who are currently experiencing this for the first time. Straight up. Agree. So I think that applies to.
We'll leave it there.
I could
talk for the next 40 minutes about this if you want to.
But leave it there. This is not the old Carlton. This is the new Carlton. It's a new Carlton. So anyway, I'm glad to get that off the chest. Let's do votes. Basically, who'd you give your one vote to?
Pitto.
Love it.
Pitto. Yeah, it was a statement vote more than anything, because I think Tom was probably actually the better ruckman on the day if you look at the impact that he had. But it's a statement vote for me, because Pitto, like I said off the top, that's as big a middle finger as I've ever seen to the entire football community, to go, you doubted me, but I'll show you what I'm capable of. So, yeah, the big fella, one vote. And then Walshy for two. We haven't spoken about Cripps, but, mate, that was vintage Cripps. That was a pleasure to watch. That was like, he took the piss so badly, kicked it to himself, one boy. Like, never seen a player kick it to himself, get their own ball, and then kick it inside 50. Just phenomenal. Phenomenal. Yeah, he's in Brownlow form, mate. Like, you come around six, he's going to be right up there. Right up there.
I think he's a proven vote getter. I think when Walsh didn't play and we won, he will poll well. And mate, I don't remember. I did get on him before the season. I can't remember what it was. I think it was $19.
Yeah, it would have been decent.
Yeah. He's probably front runner for BNF right now, Cripps.
Easily. Yeah.
Mm.
At what point do you, like, no disrespect to John Nichols, but let's say Cripps wins, he finishes his career with like 7 or 8 BNFs. Like, do you consider renaming the medal? This is a genuine question I've had in my head, because like John Nichols is a legend of the club. I get it. And like I said, absolutely no disrespect, but I think you'd have to ask the question, if Cripps finishes with a Brownlow, a couple of premierships and 8 BNFs for the club as captain.
Wow, the Patrick Cripps medal.
What do you say at that point? Like, he is the greatest that's ever played for the club, if that's how it turns out, you know? They can't be questioned.
Well, we'll see. If we can go for a three-peat, we'll see. Johnny Holden will absolutely be able to tell you a little bit about this. You got to be very careful. Sorry, John. Very, very careful.
Yeah. Like I said, it was no disrespect. It's an interesting question to pose, that's all.
Yeah. Rename it when he's dead and Cripps is retired. Okay. Anyway, it's going to become the Sam Walsh medal anyway. So, yeah. What about like an honorable mention? Because the votes were pretty cut and dry. It was Cripps and Walsh, Walsh Cripps and TDK Pitto. I think Charlie got some love. Kennedy got some love. What about a bloke that won't get a vote?
George Hewitt.
Hmm.
He has just been, Dan brought it up last night and it was a really good call. He has been doing it week in, week out, and he just hasn't been spoken about at all. Like, there hasn't been anything negative said about him. There hasn't been anything positive. There's just been no chat about George Hewitt this year. And I think he has been week to week, probably one of our most consistent, to be honest. Even when the stoppage game wasn't really going our way, he was there in and under extracting the ball when he had no right to. And he's looking as good as he's ever looked in a Carlton Guernsey. He's got some continuity under his belt after a bit of an interrupted season last year with some injury along the way. And he's looking like he's going to put together potentially a top 5 BNF year at this point. I think the coaches... he'll get a lot of love from the coaches in these first 6 weeks in their votes for BNF. So, yeah, a very special mention to Georgie Hewitt.
Yeah, interesting. I really enjoyed what Jordan Boyd did. I think mentally going into the game to play the role that he was going to play and then having to switch that up and play a defense, you know, a much more defensively minded role on a guy who's, I mean, Toby Green, where do you rank him in terms of forwards in the comp? Like, he's right up there with the best in the league. So I thought Jordan Boyd's ability to get ready for the game and then have to change that mid-game and then do the role and get to the point where, let's be honest, he got so far under Toby's skin and completely dominated him. Mm. And I think it was – probably won't get a vote on Brownlow night, but super effort.
We need to get Jordan Boyd a lot more of the football. Somehow.
Yeah.
That's all I know. Because he's going at maybe 13, 14 touches a game at the moment. But if we can get him the ball 20 times a game out in space, he can create some serious, serious transition movement for us with that right foot. He's got to be one of the better kicks in the game at the moment. He just has to be.
Yeah.
He doesn't miss a target. I can't remember the last time he missed a target. I really can't.
Yeah. Under pressure as well. He's Yeah, something about him. You know, I like that he's not a footy head.
Yeah.
In a weird way. I like he's got a good balance between life and football. It was really refreshing to hear and see that.
Yeah, you had a nice little chat to him. That was good. Yeah.
No, because I just think...
good insight. It was a really good insight into Jordan Boyd, the person. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I think to be able... Carlton is its own beast. So you need to have something to switch off from, because it can be, I mean, we're crazy. We are always plugged in and we drive ourselves insane. So I can only imagine what it would be like to be at the coalface of it all. Can you imagine actually being a player for this club?
Mate, it's something I can only ever dream about. I've dreamt about it my whole life, but never happened.
I don't know how they do it. I don't know how they do it.
They need to just embrace it. And I think they are. I think as a group, we can see that they're now embracing Carlton, like, and being part of the Carlton fabric. Like,
yeah.
I feel like it was lost on players for far too long in terms of how important this club is to how many people. And I think they're really, really now starting to wrap their head around it. Like it's quite evident that they understand what this means to us. And I think that's really come along in the last year. And you can see it. You can see it in the way they talk about the club, in the way that they, you know, talk about their importance to, you know, to the fans on game day. Like they get it. They get it.
Yeah.
For sure.
Gavin, spot on. Embrace it. Just don't read social media.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just certain pockets. Just don't read certain pockets on social media. Come to us. Yeah. We'll give you a lift.
Yeah. So that's pretty much it for round six. We'll talk about Geelong this week. We got three games at the G starting on Saturday, 4:35, back at the home of football, the soul of football. What are your initial thoughts when you think about Geelong this week?
I like the way that Geelong are going about it this year. I think they're 6-0 for a very good reason, and it's because they're a very good football side. Again, unfortunately, I feel like they never really drop off. They had a down year last year, but they tend to always bounce back pretty quickly. And the way that they're able to move the football, especially from their back half, could cause us some headaches if we're not switched on the spread from the get-go. I think if we put together a first half like we did against the Giants, where that pressure was just non-existent, I think the halftime margin is going to be far greater than 9 points. Geelong just seem a little bit more clinical. They've got the experience. They've still got a lot of premiership players in there from a couple of years ago, and they've got some seriously good young talent. Like Max Holmes this year has taken it to another level when I've watched him play. They've just got really, really good leaders with a nice crop of young guns that are coming through that if we take them for granted, they will absolutely slaughter us. That's what I think.
Yeah, I like that we have just played the Giants and we saw how lethal the better team, you know, it's a top four team, how lethal they can be and how much they can punish you off turnover. I think that's a good prep for Geelong. I think when you strip it back, like, we're top four playing in top four clashes, not going into the game thinking, oh, I hope we can get within four goals. Like, this is a winnable game.
It's a tough opponent. Yeah.
And I just think Geelong's the kind of club long-term that I want to, I take a lot of inspiration from and very fundamentally sound. And I think what we lack, they have in the fundamentals for longer, but what they lack, we have in
bursts.
The atmosphere. Yeah, the atmosphere and the magic that the Carlton team generates with its home crowd is what Geelong don't have as much of, particularly at the MCG. So it's going to be, I can just see it being Geelong chipping away, Carlton, we're going to have a momentum swing and we're going to need to be at our best for that 10-15 minute patch, whatever it is. I can't see this being anything other than a close match. So super exciting.
I tend to agree. I think this is the perfect game to back up the Giants, because if we win this, that's it. We will be premiership favorites. Like, we will be come Monday. We will be premiership favorites come Monday. This is it. This is for me, I think this is arguably the biggest game for a long time, outside of finals, obviously. I think this is the biggest home and away game that we have had the pleasure of being in for a long time, time. Because this now not only puts us in the conversation for premiership, this puts us at the top of the pile. That's how big this is. Because there's no one else. There's really no one else. We beat JWS, they were undefeated. You beat Geelong, that's it. You're coming to a Carlton game to beat us because we're the best in the comp.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, last year was a really entertaining game, round two.
It was, yeah.
Against the Cats. I kind of hope, I think from memory, we had 60-odd thousand, maybe 63. I'll need to check that. Man, would love to see a 7 in front of the crowd attendance this week.
That'd be huge.
Yeah.
I know it's an away game, but
Oh, it's our away game.
Yeah.
Oh,
okay. I still think we're going to be pretty strong in number. I would suggest that a lot of our supporters are going to buy a GA ticket to get down there for sure. For sure. Yep. Yeah.
Okay. All right. I didn't know that. I had forgotten that. So, yeah, that's an important one. That is a very important one. Team changes.
Well, it depends, right? If McGovern and Chera are fit, they come in, right? So,
you would think so.
Have we got an injury report? Nothing yet. No news.
I was waiting. I was hoping. I mean, on the 16th of April, which was a week ago, both Chera and McGovern said 1 to 2 weeks.
Mm.
So I feel like it's line ball. I feel like it won't happen. I feel like they'll just, I don't know.
Well, for me, it's the game that if they're at 90%, you play them.
Okay.
This is it. This is as big as it gets for the home and away season for us at this point. So, yeah, if they're close, I think they play. If they do play, obviously, someone's got to make way. Lewis Young probably comes out for McGovern. I actually thought Louis was okay. Ball in hand, he just looks like he does not want a bar of it. Like, it's crazy. That's right.
But just fist. Just
that's
fist.
Fine. As long as his defensive acts were there. Yeah, his defensive acts were there, and that's all that matters. But I'd say Young comes out for McGovern, and if Chez comes in, you'd probably think Fantasia makes way as sub. Carroll might have a week in the VFL. I don't know. I don't know how it's going to go. And to be honest, I don't care. I actually don't care anymore week to week.
Yeah.
Tezzy, if I'm being honest, like, we've got the system. You could put 23 spud farmers in there and they'll still win under this system.
So true. So true. Another interesting piece of information this week we saw was the investment in the Irish program for the category B rookies.
Yes. Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting.
What did you make of
that? It's a big investment. I won't make a judgment call on it, but we're obviously pretty we must have our eyes on a few out there if we're setting up that sort of a program. So we'll see. Watch and wait. We'll see. Hopefully we unearth something. It'd be great. The Irish products, if you can get one or two, and they're we saw Zach Tui, you know, he's a fantastic example of that in recent memory. But you know, they've always been a staple of the game, so we'll see.
There was a quote from it. Don't know where I saw it, but I had mentally written it down and pointed it out. Brian Cook had said, you know, we're going to invest $400,000 a year in this program and to find the talent. And he mentioned that he was very open and honest about the fact that we hadn't invested properly in it. And he said something like, that's on us. We got it wrong. I should have been more prepared. I should have had the quote ready. But I just remembered it now when I saw Weldy mention it in the chat. But I'm going to find it and I'm going to maybe post it on Instagram or something. But I liked to hear the honest feedback about ourselves that we really let it slip, you know, especially now that you've got the changes coming to the father son after next year.
Yes. And Channel Blano in the comments, interesting comment too. It could be a smart move with Tassie coming in. There's going to be draft concessions. So you need to get creative in how you're recruiting ahead of time, I guess. And that's probably a good call. So yeah, I didn't actually think about that, but if that's on our radar for that reason, then that's a very, very smart strategic football move, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Rocco Moro has become a YouTube member. Mate, welcome. 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 Good to have you here. Young Rob Monahan's coming along nicely.
Yep.
Just slowly but surely.
The only thing that the media want to show you is his miss in front of goal, but I heard very good things outside of that. Very good things.
Yeah. And then the other interesting part from the VFL, there were two. I mean, Chincotta was obviously solid. Bins was always solid. Harry Lemmy, he's a defender.
Mm. Interesting. It's interesting. I don't know if it's just a cover for Sam Durden while he's out, and it might just be a little bit experimental, but... I don't mind it because I feel like I feel like with Charlie, Harry, and Tom, we're kind of, and then once Jack Silvani's sort of back as well, you got Jack Martin, we're kind of stocked up forward in that third tall department when we're sort of fit and firing. Whereas a gaping hole in our list under injury siege is a key defensive post next to Wieters. So I don't mind it. I think give him some time for sure. He's obviously a big enough body. He's got to put some size on still, but yeah, it's a watch and wait.
Mm-hmm. And then the big one I thought was Ashton Moyer. So I went on the team Pommy's team selection show a few weeks ago, and he asked me a question. He said, what would you say Ashton Moyer needs to do to sort of force his way into the senior side and get a debut? And at the time I said, lay 10 tackles. Well, he laid 7 and kicked 3. Yeah.
There you go.
I think it's not far away.
Mm.
It's not far away for him. Do you reckon it's this week? Or?
He's exciting. I think I've been really big on with these youngsters for a little while now that they need to put together a month rather than a game.
Yeah,
so that's it was fantastic to see his impact on the weekend. But back it up again. And if you go again, we'll give you a month of senior footy. Like, that's, for me, I think the way that we need to approach these youngsters. I think for far too long, we gifted games to kids that just were not ready, and it stifled their development. So you really, at this point, for me, you've really got to earn it. And it was good to see him put it together for a game. Let's see if he can do it for a month. I'll take that approach with all of these draftees and young kids on our list, because we don't need to rely on these kids anymore. Like, we've got a very, very good senior list. Like, you need to crack in to have a proper go at it.
Yeah. No, that's good. I mean, I think Brody Kemp went through it.
Mm.
He was playing some good footy in the twos for a good chunk of time before they got him in.
Yep.
Who else? I think Cottrell to an extent. Well, early Cottrell. Well, Matt Owies, clearly.
Owies, yep. He's another one. Dirds spent a lot of time in the VFL last year. Jesse Motlop had to earn his game in his first year. I think it was 10 rounds before we saw him. So, and he had to really earn it. Like, he had to put together some solid footy. So,
Cowan,
yeah.
True. With Gokhan, yeah, Cowan, true. He's been, Cowan, you feel it's hard for someone like Cowan, because when everyone's healthy, it's such a strong back line to crack into. I think the forward line is a bit more easier.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what, if he puts together another game like he did on the weekend, he deserves another crack at it the week after. So this is what I mean. You get your opportunity, you show up, you show that you're meant to be there at senior level. You've got to say, you can't drop me. You can't. That's what these kids now need to do. Either you have to pick me, you have to, or you can't drop me once I'm in. That's it.
Yeah.
And it's got to be staring you. It's got to be staring us in the face to go, he can't make way just yet. That's all.
Fair. All right. So I want to talk about the giveaway. I want to talk about the giveaway that we're going to do next week. We're going to spin the damn wheel again next week. So to celebrate the 6th birthday of the channel or the platform, we're doing a giveaway here on the Blue Abroad Show, Monday, the 29th of April. What is going to happen, guys, is it's essentially a raffle. Tickets are $17. I'm going to put the link in the chat shortly. I'm going to show you the 6. There's going to be 6 spins of the wheel. One ticket will get you 1 entry per spin. So 6 chances to win for 1 ticket, maximum of 10. If you've been watching for the last few weeks, I've been throwing in some hints, but long story short, the Silvani family donated some incredible items from Steve's playing career, in particular his international rules playing career when he represented Australia, when we did the Australia versus Ireland thing. This is actually a rug. This was on Ben Silvani's bedroom floor for a while. So there's that. But basically, I'm going to show you now what is going to be up for grabs. There's a mix of Silvani items and some Blue Abroad items. So the first spin will be these shoes. Okay. The second spin, this is a Steve Silvani certified worn item. Check these. Okay. The third spin will be these. Those trackies have like a grass stain on the back. So that's nice. The fourth spin will be this. Okay. The fifth spin will be one of these, the brand new BA hoodies with the new logo. That'll be spin number 5. And then the sixth spin will be the 1999 Blazer. Check this out. So those are your items. No, you're not getting the rug. I'm holding on to that bad boy. I'm holding on to that bad boy. Now, if you'd like to enter, the link is in the chat. It's also pinned to the live chat on YouTube. We will spin it at about probably the end of the show next week. We'll do it at 8 p.m. We'll do the spinning of the wheel 6 times for each item. One ticket gets you an entry to each spin. Maximum number of tickets you can purchase is 10. We'll cap it there. And yeah, you get to have a share in some pretty cool memorabilia. That Blazer is like, it's a one of one piece.
Oh yeah. That there is some seriously good stuff in there. That is, that's get around it. I'm not even just saying this to like spruik it and like build it up, but if you're not in this raffle, you might miss out on some seriously good stuff. I'm buying 10 tickets tonight.
I kept 2 items for myself. Well, 3, if you include the rug, like an old school Puma King jacket I wear to games now. And then I've got like a matching tracksuit jacket and trackies, which I don't really know when I'm going to wear it, but the fact that Steve wore it is pretty cool.
Mate, that's phenomenal. Phenomenal. Yeah,
so massive thank you. Ben, I have to thank Ben. Ben was, he actually messaged me and he's like, oh, we've got all this stuff. They were moving house and yeah, he was willing to give it up. So, wanted to donate it to the community. So thank you very much.
How good's that?
We need to, I thought about this at the Hall of Fame. You know, we've made amends with Fev. We need to build the bridge again with Soss. We need to forgive and move on.
Yeah, I agree. I tend to agree. He's a legend of this club. Always will be, you know?
Yeah.
He's a hard ass. He's Italian. He's a hard ass. Like, don't take it personally. It's just the Italian demeanor. It's nothing personal. Trust me. Yeah. It's I think that'll mend over time for sure. For sure.
All in good time. Joe, any other thoughts about what's happening this week? Themes, issues on your mind?
No. If you want to hear all my other thoughts, just listen to our episode from yesterday, episode 123, Pool Abroad, Spotify.
Oh, sorry. I should have done this. Can you tell everyone? I mean, you did it last night, but hole in one. You got a hole in one.
I did. Hold on. Give me a sec.
Go on.
Here we go. So that there, that is the ball. That is the date. Yarra Bend, fifth hole, 120 meter par 3, 20th of April, 2024. That ball will never be used again. Yep, it was... they're saying not again. You know what? Bad luck. It's a hole in one. I get to talk about this for as long as I want for the rest of my life. No, it was fantastic. I won't tell the whole story, but it was phenomenal. I recently proposed to my lovely partner, and this far exceeds that moment. Far exceeds it, and I told her that.
Do
bit tongue in cheek. Relax. It's tongue in cheek. No, it was surreal. Like, mate, if you're a golfer and you have experienced that, you'll know what I'm talking about. But I still can't believe it. I really can't.
It's wild.
I keep replaying the moment in my head when I saw the ball in the cup, and it was just, you don't believe it. You really just don't. It was like a dream.
Incredible.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations on the hole in one.
Thank you, mate.
Yeah, mate. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Pleasure.
And, mate, we will see you again. Ladies and gents, thank you for a great evening. Be sure to get your giveaway raffle tickets before next week. I look forward to doing it. I love doing the giveaways, and I love doing the live calling of – maybe we won't call people six times next week, but it is cool to do that. And see you tomorrow for the preview. Go Blues.
Up the Baggers.